International Broadcasting lives on 5085. The Big One, WTWW.
Please stand by as we get ready to launch another episode of this Reality Radio Cafe Cast with your host and my husband, Denny J, K5DCC.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition, liftoff.
Now grab your glass and get ready to fill it up with some radio on the rocks.
Vehicle's pitching downrange.
Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning from sunny South Africa. Daughter Naomi, she's driving.
Hello to Danny.
Over.
And good morning, Professor Jim.
Good morning. Bonjour.
Morging?
Bonjour.
Guten Morgen.
Guten Tag.
Bonus. I forgot my Spanish. Buenas.
buenas tardes?
Bonus.
I'm terrible.
I was in Guatemala or Nicaragua one time, and there's a popular chicken place like our Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I'm going to butcher this, Polo Campiero or something like that, and I was trying to say the name of that fast food place. And of course, there are native Spanish speakers in our contingent, and so I was trying to impress them with my pronunciation of the Spanish words, and this friend of mine from Puerto Rico and another friend of mine from Venezuela, they just started laughing uproariously, and I said, "What's so funny?" And they said that I had just said dog's balls.
Now, how did you pull that out of it?
I have no idea. It's well, it's my Ozarkian pronunciation of Spanish.
Well, they laugh at me too because they say I speak Spanish with a Chinese accent. ¿Cómo está usted? Muy bien, gracias. ¿Cómo si tú? yesterday,
there's only a couple of Spanish words you really need to know to get along. Baño,
yeah.
and cerveza. Yeah.
Tres cervezas.
Dos Equis.
That reminds me of a story that my good friend and neighbor, a mile away here, told me, and he's a great motorcycler, has a Harley. He and his buddies were from up in Minnesota, and they went down to Mexico. And they got across the border, and they were getting very, very thirsty and hungry. And they came across this building and had a big sign outside of it. I think it, what is it? Corolla or something. It looked like a big beer sign. I thought, oh, good. We can stop and get a drink. So they just walk in the door. There's nobody else there, but there was this table. So they just sat at the table and waited and waited. And finally, they see these three women are out in the kitchen. We're looking at them very strangely, looking very concerned. And they thought, what's taking them so long to service us? So the gals came up to the table. And these guys didn't know very good Spanish, but they looked at the gals and they said, tres cervezas, por favor. And anyway, they brought them some beers, but they didn't come back with a menu or anything. And they thought, well, this is really weird. Well, here they find out it was someone's private home and the Corolla sign was just covering up a hole in the wall. Can you imagine being the owners of that house?
Oh, Daniel's batteries are dying. Daniel's battery.
I see that. Anyway, I had a good day yesterday. We ended up getting my radio back for the second time, my Kenwood D74.
Does it work?
Yes, right now it's working. I'm crossing my fingers. And it's been 3 months without it. It took me 2 months the first time and a month the second time. It better last this time or I'm going to literally take it out and shoot it. And we got a new car. We bought my brother-in-law's Ford Fusion, 2014 Ford Fusion. Haven't had a car that nice in my life with all the bells and whistles and the computer screen and everything. It does so much, man. I'm totally confused.
You're reminding me of a college buddy of mine with whom I still maintain contact after all these years. And he used to have a job. He like me, was a photographer. And one of his jobs was he worked for a company that would send a photographer to a church or he also did softball league pictures and so forth. But you've seen photographers come into churches and they'll take portraits of everybody and produce kind of a yearbook of the church members. And of course, people can order prints for themselves and so forth. Well, he did a lot of travel and he lived in St. Louis, but he went to Western Kansas and Ohio. He had covered quite a territory, and he always had Toyota cars, and he would keep them for at least 400,000 miles before he'd get rid of them.
Wow.
And he, like me, was odd. He would, even with his newer cars, he would immediately install analog gauges, an analog oil pressure gauge, an analog battery monitor, and so forth. And he had actual, these little thermometers with circular dials that you might check your yogurt temperature or something like that. He would stick one of those thermometers in the vents, where the air conditioning and the heat comes out. And since he lived in St. Louis, and I think McDonnell Douglas is there, he went to a garage sale once, and he found somebody was selling in their garage sale, probably a McDonnell Douglas engineer. There was an airplane landing light, the lights that are in the front edge of an airplane wing, commercial mm-hmm. airplane. Mm-hmm. To light up the runway. Well, those are pretty high intensity and high amperage. So he had to hunt around for a high amperage toggle switch, which he then drilled a hole in his dashboard and mounted that toggle switch. And he mounted that light front dead center on his front bumper. And he said when he turned that on at night, a lot of other cars blinked their lights at him. Anyway, he went into a bit of a depression. He called me one time on the phone. And what was he to do? That light had burnt out. He obviously couldn't replace it. It was one of a kind that he got in a garage sale. You can't just go into a store and buy an aircraft landing light. Anyway, he maintained and that on these long drives, he avoided monotony, which itself his solution would seem to be a source of monotony to me. But anyway, he would avoid monotony by constantly monitoring these analog gauges. And his point was, he knew exactly what normality looked like in the analog world as he was riding in his car. So if the thermometer in his vent, if he had the air conditioning on and the thermometer read a little bit hotter than it normally would, well, he knew it was about time to go get that refrigeration checked. So he constantly, and he claimed that this was one technique to keep his cars running for 400,000 miles or so. And they were still running when he traded them in. I mean, these Toyotas that he had were fabulous. On the other hand, mice and rats love to chew the wiring in Toyotas. I never did finish that story the other day.
No, you're going to tell me why they do that.
Well,
they add flavoring to the plastic covering.
Well, actually, in the old days, insulation on wiring was a kind of a plastic, and as you're aware, most plastic is a derivative of petroleum. And at some point, to change, maybe to be more environmentally conscious, or maybe to save money, all the car manufacturers switched to a vegetable source of that insulation. I think they used soybeans or something to produce the insulation over the wiring. And in Toyota's formula, they actually, if I remember correctly, had a little bit of sugar in the formula for whatever reason. And so, guess what? The mice and rats just love to eat that stuff. And they can, you know, the wiring harness of a car is, you know, upwards between $2,000 and $3,000 to replace it. And of course, once they invade, you know, they can chew it in multiple places very quickly, and you have to replace the entire wiring harness. And then you get it back home, and they go work at it again. You have to replace the wiring harness again. Now, do all cars have this problem? Yes, really. But one of the articles I read when I was considering buying a Toyota was an apartment complex. Apartment complexes typically don't have garages for all the vehicles. They just have, some of them just have kind of a overhead roof, but no walls, if you know what I'm talking about, just to keep the sun off. And so there are all these cars up and down the row, you know, different brands. But the mice and rats will go first to the Toyotas. They'll go to other cars too, but they'll go first to the Toyotas. And so anyway, Hondas have this problem too. You can actually buy, we're all familiar with black electrician's tape, right? Well, imagine if the tape, that same kind of tape, wasn't black. And imagine if it had stamped along every inch or so a little outline drawing of a mouse. Well, Honda actually sells that tape as an accessory, so that once your car has been hit by the rats and mice and you have to replace the wiring harness, you can buy this stuff from Honda, or at least you used to be able to. And then you hand wrap all your wiring with this exposed with this tape. And this tape has what's that, the stuff that makes hot peppers hot, capsaicin or whatever it is, or, you know, it's got something that would be a very, very hot seasoning for us anyway, that's embedded in that tape. And that is supposedly protects your wiring. But imagine having to hand wrap all your wiring after you bought a new car. I saw one guy that, you know, when you take the side panels off of a car, the doors and the rear panels and whatnot, they're not solid. Take the interior finishing off, pry it off, and there's giant big holes in the in the side panels and the doors and so forth. And that is to lighten the weight of the car. You don't need to have a solid door. You just need to have the frame be sturdy. So what happens is if the mice get any entry into one of these cavities in the exterior skin of your car, they can get into the interior too, and they like the cushioning in the seats and so forth. So this guy bought a brand new car, took all of the interior, side panels off, and he bought hardware curtain at the hardware store, which is just like if people don't know what hardware curtain is, it's like a mesh wiring that's fairly coarse, not like window screen, which would be fine. And then he got a bunch of metal screws, and he would cut this hardware curtain with a pair of tin snips or something to fit all these holes on the inside of the skin of the car, screw that up, and then put the finishing paneling back on. And he went to that length to mouse-proof a brand new Toyota.
That's nuts.
It is.
We have four cats. That takes care of it. We don't see any rats or mice around here.
Yeah, that should do it.
Yeah.
That should really do it.
You know, we were talking about the lights on the car, and I was talking about our new car, which has got satellite mapping. Finally, GPS. Never had that. We always had to use our phones, but now we've got one built in, big screen there in the middle of the dashboard, and it makes me think of all the things now that are using GPS. Even our radios. Do you have any radios with GPS?
Yes, I have a. ICOM ID51.
Do you use it?
No.
You turn it on? You don't turn it on?
Well, right now, I'm using it in the house to go to my hotspot, and I turn the GPS off because it's just a waste of battery power, right?
Right.
Because I don't need it in the house. But no, I've never had a need to use it, no.
Do you have a D-Star repeater in your area?
We did. And the reason that I built the hotspot is that the very time I had this radio for like 3 years, never figured out D-Star because I was trying to figure it out from the ICOM manual. And I got so confused, I just thought, I'm just way too stupid to use this radio. And so I just gave it up quickly and went on to other pursuits, whatever that was, taking an art class or going out and doing photography or whatever it was to avoid reading the ICOM manual for D-Star. And finally, one day, I just decided, I'm retired. I've got lots of time. I am going to figure out D-Star. And so I started looking into it, and I had registered myself shortly after I got the radio with this local D-Star repeater. And so I was registered, just couldn't figure out how to use the radio. And so when I decided, by gosh, I'm going to figure this out, within a few days, the local repeater announced they were going out of business. They just shut down, and there went my registration. By the way, I had to eventually re-register with some other.
Was that your gateway?
That was my gateway. Yeah.
Oh.
And you only need to register once through somebody.
Right.
But if that somebody goes out of business, then you've got to re-register with somebody else.
Really?
So,
I didn't know that.
Yep. So I did that, and. Then, as if it were a sign from above, which you would like, the very issue of QST that came within days after this happened, there was an article in that QST on how to build your own D-Star hotspot. with Raspberry Pi Zero. And I thought, aha, this is the answer. So I did that. I got the Raspberry Pi Zero W, which has Wi-Fi. And I got something off of eBay, which is the actual radio circuitry that it's a little hat that sits on top of the Raspberry Pi. And it came with a metal case, which I eventually didn't like, and I 3D printed my own case, which I like a lot better. And it my own case has a desk mount, so it's screwed to the underside of one of my desks and just sits out to the side of the desk. And the little antenna... The little antenna that sits on the hotspot is the perfect resting place for my plastic Irish tin whistle. It's not made out of tin, so it doesn't... It's made out of plastic, so it doesn't affect reception or transmission. And I figured all that out. Now, of course, figuring out how to program the hotspot was yet another challenge. But the QST article had sufficient depth that I was able to figure that out. And I actually got on the air that way. And by the way, that's how we met. We met on D-Star.
Exactly. You've got a good memory for an old guy.
Well, you know, it comes and goes. I met with my former doctoral student in Bloomington. He's nearly as old as I am. When I was a young professor, he was only a few years younger than me. And we were telling stories, and he would give the background of a story, and then he would sort of say, "Now, I forgot why I was telling this." And he did that about three times, and every time I just laughed and laughed and laughed. I said, "Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one."
Well, do you know why most of us old guys have D-Star with GPS?
I don't know.
Because we're always walking around going, "Where am I?" I'm with you. D-Star was very complicated to me, and I mean, I understand DMR backwards and forwards with no trouble, and everybody's always confused about that. But when I got into D-Star, it was like, what in the world? It took me a year to get my ID31 working on D-Star. I just, like you, I used it for an analog radio. That was it.
Well, you start, if you're a newbie and don't know anything about it, you know, I don't think it would take me very much time to redo what I did now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Oh my! It's at least for me seemed to be very complicated to figure out, but I did it.
Yeah,
and
I finally got to experience what all my friends experience when I talk about all this digital stuff, where I say, "Well, this it's simple." Yeah, it's simple for you. You know, when I started D-Star, I felt like an idiot, and I'd go to these websites. Oh, D-Star is real simple. What are you talking about? This is so convoluted. I can't figure it out for anything. But now that I'm in it and I understand it and I'm using it, yeah, now it is kind of simple. But it is kind of nice that that this technology, the digital modes like DMR and D-Star, have the GPS functionality that actually becomes part of your transmission. And you can, well, like using it for APRS, we're talking on the satellite. You know, you just turn on your GPS and it records your location. You can even use it, like my D-74, I can use it for hiking and make waypoints and plot it on a map. And it's pretty handy.
Yep, it is. Now, yesterday I decided it probably was time I upgraded the firmware in the ID-51. So I investigated that, and of course ICOM wants you to buy a special cable to do that. Although the ID-51 has an SD card in it, and the normal way of upgrading firmware would be simply put the firmware upgrade on the SD card. That's the way everybody else does their upgrades. But oh no, not ICOM. You have to have, number one, a Windows computer, Number two, you have to have one of their cables. Well, I got to thinking, so I thought, well, I already have the RT Systems cable to program the ID51. And so I thought, well, I'll just, since this has to be on the Windows machine, I'll just download the Windows version of my programming software from RT Systems and install it on my Windows machine. And I will theoretically be able to use the data cable from RT Systems that I already have. Well, I downloaded the software, I unzipped it, and the unzipped software I downloaded said Mac OS. So I called tech support at RT Systems and said, I said, look, I tried to download the Windows version of the software and it unzipped as at Mac OS. And it turns out that I installed the software on my Mac first, and that locks it only to be used on a Mac. So I can't use their programming software on my new Windows machine. I said, I was trying to do this so I could attempt to use your data cable to upgrade the firmware. And they said, you still can. All you have to do is download the Windows driver for our cable. And you don't need our software to upgrade the firmware. You just need the cable and the driver for the cable. So I did that and downloaded the upgrade, the firmware upgrade from ICOM on my Windows machine. And it updated just fine using the RT Systems cable that I already had.
Cool. Now you have to update your system on your 7300 too, don't you, from time to time?
Yes, but of course, ICOM must have gotten the smarter. I already did that, by the way. And that's much simpler. You just put the update on the SD card and pop it in, and there you go.
Cool. Have you got it mastered yet?
I know a lot more than I did a week ago.
Are you reading the manual?
No, I tend to, I'm not reading the manual. I did get Grid Tracker working last night. Do you use Grid Tracker?
I don't think so. What is it? Is that for showing all your grids that you've worked on a map?
Oh, it's for what doesn't it do? Yes, it shows all of your contacts that you've worked on a map.
Based on LOTW, probably.
Well, it actually is based on the data file that it's a companion to WSJT.
Okay.
So it uses the data file that is produced by WSJT. Oh. But when you can set it to, like when you're working somebody on FT8, you can set it to go to QRZ and display all their information from QRZ, including a picture, if they've set up their QRZ to use a picture. Yeah.
And right.
Once I realized that, I updated my QRZ account to use a picture. So, and it shows, the address, the email address, everything of the contact you're trying to contact. It also shows if you worked them before. And then I was a little bit disturbed that once I booted Grid Tracker, WSJT was no longer directly interacting with my logging software. In other words, without this booted, WSJT, when you click on something, it brings up their call sign, and their name, and their location in the logging software I use. However, you can set up a Grid Tracker to, once you confirm a contact and click log it, Grid Tracker will then log all that data back to my logging software. So And Grid Tracker, in a sense, displays the information I'm interested in about the contact in a much more friendly display, much nicer display than does the logging software. It's more compact too. And I'm rapidly discovering, you know, with WSJT open, with Grid Tracker open, with the waterfall display open, and your logging software open, you literally need a 60-inch monitor.
Yeah. I'm on their website downloading it right now. Did you happen to look at their fun link with all these old, like, ads? Like, they have this old black and white of a guy and his wife. She's in an apron. She's got a duster, feather duster. And he says, I'm so happy since we got Grid Tracker. I don't even wonder why she put the cat on a stick anymore. I never liked digital modes until Grid Tracker. All these old pictures, old commercials.
It's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. Well, somebody's pretty creative here. This one was a color, old color, looks like a magazine cover. Contains 100% of your daily grids and zone requirements. And he got this woman, looks like she's out of the 50s. Looks like I Love Lucy holding this thing. Grid Tracker, WSJTX companion.
Yep, and I'll have to send you, I found a useful YouTube video in which some guy is interviewing the creator of Grid Tracker. And he is verbally telling you some initial settings you have to be sure are active on WSJT in order for Grid Tracker to work. Oh. And I'm trying to figure out how on this Windows computer I can retrieve that link and put it in our chat. So let me just try and figure that out. Going to bookmarks. And I think this is it. And of course, an ad pops up, so I have to wait and see if this is what I'm thinking about.
Wow, there's a lot of stuff being decompressed in this install. My goodness.
Yeah, this is it. All right. So let me copy this. Control C rather than.
Okay. I hear the grader outside. I think they're trying to straighten out our roads after all this rain we've had. If you can hear that rumbling in the background, that's our grader.
So, do you have a Jeep in order to get to town?
You almost need one sometimes. It's not a long trip up here, gravel road, but after heavy rains, it does tend to wash out roads, and the creeks go over the road and dump a lot of debris on it and things, so... We've had, in the last week or so, I think we've had probably 6 inches of rain. And more's on the way.
Okay. I sent you and others who may be listening in the chat, the useful video on how to integrate Grid Tracker with WSJT from the creator of it.
Very
Grid
cool.
Tracker.
By the way, my wife is preparing. She's been preparing since yesterday afternoon for our little farmer's market up in Diamond City on Bull Shoals Lake. And she's going to have her own little stand with homemade cinnamon rolls and fresh bread and plants and flowers. And we'll see how long this lasts. It's a lot of work. I don't think she makes anything for it, really.
I programmed my ID51 to reach a local repeater, which is in a linked system. It covers basically the southern half of Indiana. And the only problem is once you key up, you have to wait about 2 seconds before you start talking because it takes a little bit of time for all the repeaters to link to one another. But I was able to participate in that net with my ID51 with just the little rubber ducky that comes with it. So when I get my slot antenna built, I think I'll have pretty good coverage of basically the using a 440 repeater, the southern half of Indiana. That's not bad, huh?
Not bad.
And the repeater I'm trying to hit is to the south of me. And I sent John Portoon a bunch of questions last night, if he has time to answer them, about what I am contemplating, which I don't know if is whether it's feasible or not. But it turns out when I bought my MFJ pass-through for my coax connectors and ground and so forth, I thought three coax connectors would be enough. And I need four.
Yeah.
Well, the pass-through I have does, it has three coax pass-throughs and one twin lead pass-through. So the question I pose to him is, you and other people typically feed these things with coax, but could they be fed with one form or another of twin lead? You know, the either the commercial version with rectangles of plastic cut out between the supporting plastic, or actually building twin lead, you know, with wires and separators. And in my mind, my simplistic mind, theoretically, it ought to be possible if you just find the right feed point, I would think. But then what do I know? Anyway, I posed that question to John, and I think he will have the definitive answer.
And we need to get him on here, get somebody on here. We didn't do a video yet this week.
The other question I had was, and I think I already know the answer, since the repeater I want to hit is to the south and the back side of my house faces south, I ought to be able to build something out of copper and just sort of screw it to the wall, the south side of my house, up as high as I can get it. And because it doesn't need to hit anything to the north, so why wouldn't that work? I mean, the house would be in the way of the antenna to the north, but there's nothing but air to the south. So why wouldn't that work?
Hmm.
I'm asking you.
It should, I would think.
I would think so too.
Yeah.
So the other issue is if I can use one form or another of twin lead, and then I guess there has to be something when the twin lead comes into the house, I've got to do something to convert it to 50 ohms before I hook it up to an ICOM or something. But I think there are ways of doing that. I just don't know what they are yet.
You've got all the time in the world. Well,
we got to get from, 300 ohms or something down to 50 ohms.
Yep. And you can do that probably with a choke. Mm-hmm. Just a number of wrappings. In fact, you don't even need to wrap it around anything. I've seen that. You just a little loop and put some
cable
ties on it. Yeah, that should work.
So, and I would do that after the twin lead comes into the house, correct?
Yeah. It sounds like it needs to be kind of close to the antenna. In fact, sometimes you see people with their cable going up to the antenna, running up the
the tower. That's what I've
seen. We'll have loops before it gets to the antenna.
But that's, you're looping coax at the antenna. I'm thinking about not putting coax on the antenna, but twin lead.
Right.
And then bringing the twin lead into the through the pass through, but in the window with the twin lead connectors.
Right.
So then I guess I could extend the twin lead right on down to my desk and put something there before I attach it to the the ID-51.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
A tuner would do it, I suppose. We need to get John in here to talk. It's just a tuner, some kind of a maybe manual tuner.
You mean I'm going to have to buy something else just because I don't have an extra coax connector to pass through? You can
build your own.
Yeah, if I knew what I was doing.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing this link to this video on Grid Tracker. I think I'm going to have to watch it. This looks way too complicated.
I happened to have my headphones as last night when I was listening to this very same video, and it was like bombs went off. There was sporadic giant interference.
And on his end?
No, in my headphones. And in fact, I thought it was like maybe there was a war going outside my house. And so I took the headphones off and then I couldn't hear it anymore. So it was actually some kind of interference that was coming into my Windows computer.
Hmm.
And, you know, I've been having sporadic problems with the power supply on this IP phone. I unplugged the power supply from the phone and all that interference went away.
Oh,
so the other day when you said my audio was not good, I'm wondering, and that phone was on at that time. It was up and lit.
Oh.
So I'm thinking of, I have some excess buck converters, which can convert a higher DC voltage to a lower DC voltage. And I'm thinking about just running a buck converter from my power distribution center of my station out to the phone. Of course, it's Chinese made. It may produce its own interference. Who knows?
Your audio sounds excellent this morning. By the way, Chris jumped in later in the morning yesterday. We chatted real quick before we had to head out the door. But, boy, he sure has excellent audio, doesn't he?
He really does. And he actually read the bagel study that I sent him.
Oh, good.
And suggested I now need to apply for a grant to extend the study.
He seems kind of witty. And he complimented us on our podcast. He listened to the episode with him in it. And he said, man, the audio sounded very professional, very excellent. So appreciate it, Chris. Thanks for your feedback, being that you're the pro. We're just amateurs here.
He obviously is a pro.
Yeah. I have a feeling he probably did the audio at NBC.
Mm.
Being as his comment when he was mentioning that his uncle, and he says, and I was there. He might have been doing the audio, maybe on the last show. I don't know. Anyway, what's the what if question of the day before we run out of time?
Well, first I have to ask a personal question, which you can refuse to answer. But do you take a bath or shower at least once a day?
Shower, yes.
As do I. Shower once a day without fail.
Yeah.
Are you a morning shower person or an evening shower person?
Most of the time morning. It depends on what I'm doing. You know, if I've got a lot of dirty work to do, I won't shower in the morning and I'll wait till later in the evening before I go to bed. But mostly in the morning. I like to start out fresh and clean.
Okay. So, and the world is bifurcated on evening showers and morning showers. And I, until COVID, did an annual photo trip with some scouting friends. We go to Florida and photograph birds. And the fellow I usually room with is a morning shower person, and I'm an evening shower person, so it's absolutely compatible. We're never fighting for the bathroom. And but I can't go to sleep at night without an evening shower. And I feel quite refreshed when I get up in the morning. So anyway, what if we did not take a daily bath or shower. And during COVID, people had fewer interactions with other people, and their at-home behavior changed. People were taking fewer showers. There was a study in Great Britain that found that 17% of Britons abandoned daily showers. So what would we gain if we abandoned a daily shower? Well, soap strips our skin of natural oils. And in fact, people in Central American countries rub coffee on their face. Why? Because coffee has oil in it, and it replenishes it. It's actually a very nice skin refresher. And when you kiss your spouse, you get that smell of fresh morning coffee all the time. So it was really at the beginning of the 20th century that people began to take daily baths and showers. A lot of people moved to big cities. The big cities were typically dirtier than wherever they had been living before. And they began taking these daily showers. And the wealthy people, in an attempt to separate them from the masses, begin to buy fancy soaps and shampoos and so forth that all come in plastic containers. The article I read said plastic bottles, but I don't think there is any such thing as a plastic bottle. Bottles are made out of glass. We have plastic containers. Anyway, of course, plastic bottles are made from petroleum. So it's using petroleum to produce something that doesn't biodegrade typically. So an 8-minute shower uses 17 gallons of water. Even a 5-minute shower is equivalent in energy use to a 60-watt light bulb burning 14 hours. This is the old 60-watt light bulbs, not the LED equivalents. So we could have a healthier skin, and we could be more environmentally conscious if we did not take a daily bath or shower. Now, I can't conceive of doing that. And I'll tell you a quick story about it. It's actually a very funny story. When our son was 11, he became a Boy Scout. And about that time, he didn't really like to take a daily bath or shower. And we were trying to encourage him to do so as parents. Well, one of the points of the Scout law is a Scout is clean. And we were quizzing him about the Scout law and made the point, the Scout is clean, you should take a shower bath every day. We also, at one point early on, asked him what he thought it took to make a good Boy Scout. And he thought very carefully for 30 seconds or so and said, well, it helps to be a bit of a pyromaniac. Anyway, shortly thereafter, we made a trip to visit my parents, his grandparents. And my dad said, Brian, would you like to see the Scout handbook your dad used when he was a boy? And of course, my son was very interested in that. And in the Scout handbook, it has clear descriptions of all the points of the Scout law. And within a few minutes, Brian came with my old Scout handbook open to the page that has the copy that describes why a Scout should be clean and how to be clean. And in my Scout hat book, it clearly stated, which he pointed out, that a Scout should take a shower or bath at least once a week.
Yeah.
So that was the standard. Let's see, one at 45, 55. That'd be the mid-1950s. That was the Boy Scout standard for cleanliness at that point. Shower once a week. So that's the what if question. What if we took fewer showers?
I think it's all a result of marketing, don't you think? We've been programmed since youth what we need, what we should eat, what we should smell like, what we should wear. And right. After years of growing up and smelling, you know, nice deodorants and colognes and perfumes, and we're programmed. But you go in some parts of the world, BO smells good. That's good, right.
Well, there's a fabulous book. Now, let me try and remember the title. Yes, I do remember the title. A Natural History of the Senses. Now, who wrote that? I'm blanking on the author. It's a wonderful book. And I actually used a few paragraphs, excerpts from that book in my visual communication course. Why? Because the author had a way of writing that just invoked images in your head. She said, no, I've really got to look that up. It's a shame I can't remember. Just a minute. Okay, the author is Diane Ackerman, Ackerman. Then the book is A Natural History of the Senses. And she has, the book covers cultural differences in the way we approach all of the senses, smell, sight, hearing, so forth, touch. And I still remember on smell in the, you know, people around the world adapt to what they have in their environment. So, for example, in some parts of the world, when people die, I mean, we bury people in the ground. But in some parts of the world, there's so much rock, you can't dig a hole in the ground. And in one culture, there is actually a specialized person which will take a knife and cut the flesh off the bones of the deceased person while the family is not in the immediate vicinity, but on a nearby hill watching the process, perhaps. And then the flesh is laid out on a rock, and the birds come and eat it, and the bodies, just all the parts that would rot are kind of immediately disposed of that way, and they're left with bones. So, in other words, people adapt. Their burial practices adapt depending on whether they can dig a hole or not. Well, so do other things. And I never have forgotten this. In the Maasai tribe in Africa, the women use cattle dung as a hairdressing. And the Maasai men think that is appealing. So, well, they're out in the middle of nowhere, and what they have available is animal dung.
Mm-hmm.
They can't go to the local CVS or Walmart and buy hair dressings.
I'm going to have to ask my pastor about that. He and his wife were missionaries there with the Maasai.
So, yes, ask about that. Anyway, yeah. You're right. What we think is appealing is essentially culturally based. Well, anyway, this author, Diane Ackerman, writes with such, the way she writes, it evokes visual imagery. And most of the students in my visual communication class didn't want to be there. It was a required class. That's why I enjoyed teaching it. Because if people really don't want to be there, And at the end of the course, they come up and say, I really like this. Well, then, then you've done your job as a teacher. So I used to read passages from this book to my visual communication class simply because most of them were going to be journalists. And I made the point, if you can write like Ackerman, you will really complement the photojournalism that goes along with your piece. So anyway, that's my book citation of the day.
Well, I think that applies to the various tastes in ham radio. You know, we all come from a little different background. We're different ages. A lot of the young people don't have any history of smelling a tube in a radio or the dust as it's heated up, you know. Yes. All they know is the smell of new plastic and the sounds are different. The feel is different. The weight is different. So we all come with a different cultural background.
The smell of smoke from a blown capacitor. It's just incomparable.
Yeah. So anyway, well, this has been a fun morning again. And I would just encourage you all to be radioactive in whatever culture, whatever your world is like there, and enjoy it and share it with others. And I would appreciate if some of you guys that are listening would jump in here in our channel. Just go to k5dcc.com. I've set it up now so it actually puts you right in the voice chat. So anytime you guys want to join us, 7 o'clock a.m. Central Time, just go to k5dcc.com and join us in our audience. Be prepared to share your story. And tell us what you're doing in ham radio. So I will say 73 from the Digicom Cafe.
And I will say 73. And thank you, Denny, for bringing my diversions, my intellectual diversions, back to ham radio.
I love it. Thanks, Jim.
Hi, this is Extra Class Amateur Radio Operator, K5DCC. I just upgraded to my extra class last year. You know how I did it? I used HamTest Online. Did you know that HamTest Online is the top-rated study program on eham.net? 97% of reviewers gave them 5 stars. They have more 5-star user reviews than all other study methods combined, and success is guaranteed. If you fail the amateur radio license exam, they will refund your subscription. It's a no-brainer. You pass the exam or get a full refund. Try it for yourself at hamtestonline.com.
Hello, Cafeers. Denny J here in the beautiful Ozarks of Northwest Arkansas, out in the country, 25 miles from any large city. Out here in the country, we struggle to get good internet. Maybe you have the same problem. If you live in a rural area, you don't have many options. It's either satellite or DSL or cellular. And believe me, we've tried them all. Just recently, I was more than happy to pay the penalty to get out of our satellite service. Latency was horrible. And for amateur radio communications, the delays were up to 5 seconds. And you probably experienced what that's like. Our DSL service was also very unreliable. We rarely got the speeds that we were promised, and it kept dropping out. But now I think I found a service that we're going to love. It's called Visible.com. It's a company that's owned by Verizon and kind of a pared-back service, but works beautifully for my situation here out in the country on 15 acres. Visible.com offers only one plan. It's unlimited everything. Unlimited calls, text, and internet at slightly slower speeds than their top drawer plan at Verizon. But it does use the Verizon network. Go to Visible.com and use my referral code 3NOVEMBER37NOVEMBERTANGO. Also, to get your $40 a month bill reduced to $25, you need to be part of a party pay group. You can join me in our Digicom Cafe party. You will find the link to these things down in the show notes here, along with links to our Digicom Cafe community portal, which is a Facebook alternative. Also our Telegram community, where we have text and voice chat, and also our live cafe cast here in the Digicom Cafe.
So get your line at visible.com. And again, use my referral code and join our party to get that bill down to $25 a month.
Thank you for listening to this Radio on the Rocks Cafe cast. We invite you to join our mighty network's amateur radio community at members.digicomcafe.com.